Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, great. And hello, Josh Randall. Welcome. You seem to have just joined us. Thank you. Okay. Kathy, what do you have to report for the energy people? Kathy?
Kathy is on the chat. She's typing something.
Okay.
I think she wants to dial in because her voice wasn't clear.
Okay. Okay, meanwhile, Josh, this is Laura Kahn. I chair this council, and we're happy you're here, and welcome. Okay, so while Kathy is typing...
I can try unmuting Kathy and see if that...
Yeah, but...
see if she can talk.
Okay.
Unmuting me isn't the problem. I couldn't hear her.
Oh, okay.
And so I've been trying to dial in, but I'm sort of stuck in a holding pattern there. But you can hear me now?
Yeah, yes. Clear.
Okay, then I'm going to stop dialing in.
Okay.
I guess the big news on the energy front, the New Haven Energy Task Force has not been meeting over this, well, since COVID, since the shutdown, actually. We'll probably resume meetings, but we've all been really busy. Most of us are active in some capacity with the Governor's Council on climate change, giving input into various committees, electric sector, the building sector. Some folks are involved also in land use and infrastructure. People are all over. There's just so much going on in the Governor's Council for Climate Change, and that's all about to come to public comment period. And because of COVID, they decided to keep that, to also have a public participation period that extends throughout 2021 in order to really engage the community. I guess the key points about that are that this time around, there's an emphasis on equity and environmental justice lens and reviewing every recommendation through an equity and environmental justice lens, which is really great news. That said, I will give you links and, connect anyone in this group to that process. But if you want to find out more right away, you can just go to the DEEP website and the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection website.
I sent out a link this afternoon. It's, if you scroll down below the Zoom link into all the documents, I sent the link you sent me the last time. So thank you.
Okay. So other than that, I guess I'll give a little bit of a promotion for the I Heart My Home program, because this has been getting some recognition statewide as a pilot that's a free energy concierge service where we work with folks to help analyze their energy needs for their house and work with them, whether it's just to beef up their insulation or install solar or heat pumps. And we help people know what to do in what order in order to achieve their goals. I'm sorry, I choke up sometimes, to achieve their goals and also to access the resources that are available. And so this is a program for homeowners, renters, landlords, people that are about to buy a house, all income levels. And we're offering this free because it's a pilot, and we're welcoming as many people as possible into the program. And just know that right now the incentives for everyone are much better than they probably ever will be and ever were. And that is a direct result of COVID and its impact on the existing programs, the existing utility programs. So they're playing catch up, trying to keep the vendors in business. So I really urge everyone to take advantage of those incentives. And if you want to do that through us, that would be great, because then we can build up a good database of information that we can show how, you know, how successful this approach is. But even if you don't want to work with us, you should still do whatever you can to take advantage of those opportunities. That's about it. That's kind of, yeah, I guess the task force itself doesn't have anything in particular to report.
Okay. Kathy did send me the whole thing about a description of I Heart My Home. So I will put it in the minutes and you'll all get it. So thank you.
I'll send you something new and I'll send you something that's a little more up to date. Thanks.
Great. And anybody whose email address is not on the Environmental Advisory Council email list who wants to be on it, you can type me a message in the chat privately and I will add your address. Okay. So let's
Laura,
see. Yeah.
Can I make one comment to support Kathy? I Heart My Home.
Yes.
So I refer two people to them, not in New Haven, but still in Connecticut. And they got help and one family put on 30 panels and another family put on 100 panels. And just think about how much fossil fuel energy has been saved from getting into the atmosphere. So, and I highly recommend them. And Michael helped me put on my solar panel. So I really recommend this program because it is super complicated, you know, to choose a vendor and to know what to do and if it's worth it for you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Iris, for your support for this program. I agree. Yeah. Okay. We're going to the Water Committee. Iris?
So I just got an update. There was a Water Council meeting this afternoon. So I thought that the two rain events will get us out of drought because we're Connecticut and, you know, how bad could it be? So basically from New Haven north, we're still under what they call stage two drought. The deficit in rainfall, the average rainfall was 8 inches. So I don't know how much rain fell in the last 2 days. So there's a committee that meets every 2 weeks with the Office of the Policy and Management under, I think they're with DEEP, and they're meeting tomorrow for the update. But what they said is it's probably going to keep Connecticut, so north from us, it will keep us from not going to stage three. And south of us, we have no drought and a little bit, a combination of no drought and abnormal conditions, which I believe is stage one. So yes. We're still in, Connecticut as a whole is still in stage two drought, if you could average that. But if we get more rains like that, you know, who knows?
Yeah, if I looked on the RWA website and they said New Haven is in stage one, not stage two yet, but yes. Yeah.
So it's from it's north of us. It's stage two. We are in stage one. And yeah. South of it, there's no drought and there's a combination of no drought and stage one.
Yes, which is not good. So let me say that I have noticed many neighbors watering their lawns and gardens at the wrong time, and I sent a BlackWatch email to everybody with advice about how much water to use, when to mow, you know, stuff like that, and nobody pays any attention. But anyway, people should be watering their lawn in the early morning before dawn and only 1 inch a week unless it is above 85 degrees, and then 2 inches a week. And you're not supposed to water your lawn often because that gets the roots to be weak. You're supposed to water it, you know, give it a good soaking and then let it sink in. I will also say that one day in July on a 90 degree day, I was passing by the Yale School of Management at 2:55 p.m. and they had 11 sprinklers going. There was water on the sidewalk, water in the street. The flower beds were wet. They had just been watered. The grass was very green. The sod in the atrium was very green. They're using the sprinklers on the athletic fields behind my house. I don't understand what's going on, what people are thinking. And Yale gets a discount on its water. And it is spending tuition money on water that it doesn't need to. Grass can go dormant and come back. And they're not going to be using the athletic fields for the fall or the winter athletics. And they just don't need to do this. Anyway, I'm putting in my usual pitch about big property owners in New Haven misusing our resources. So I don't know how many of you besides Anstris had this problem, but there has been discolored water in Worcester Square and in Fairhaven and in East Haven. And it started the weekend of Father's Day, which was June 19th to 21st. That weekend, I got 2 robocalls from the city and 3 from the Regional Water Authority asking us to cut down on water use by 10% and telling us that discolored water was because of minerals in the system, not because of something new in the water system, but in the water supply, but still, we don't really want discolored water. It's unpleasant to look at. You're not supposed to do your laundry in it because it can change the color of your clothing and it tastes weird. So I don't know, Sal, did you have water problems? Have you had them?
No. Discolored water.
Okay. Well, I know other people have, and I think we need to encourage everybody to get together and save water so that we don't have this problem. If we just use our water more wisely, I think it will help with the problem. Hi, I noticed Pat Wallace has joined us. Welcome, Pat. Thanks for coming.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, of course. Yes.
I'm just wondering whether the city and the water company could both put on their website and maybe even send out, we've gotten a lot of messages from the mayor on the emergency system about trying to conserve water. I think what you just said about when to water if you feel you need to, all of that guidance, there's many people that don't do things in an optimal way because no one has ever told them about how to do it right. And I think it'd be great if maybe the city had some information about this on their website.
It's interesting. I looked on the RWA website today and they do have tips for saving water indoors and outdoors.
So if the next time the mayor sends out a notice, rather than just say telling people to try to save water, to actually say, and if you want some tips, go to the city's website.
Great idea.
Yep.
Maybe one of the city officials who is on with us can suggest that to him. Okay. So, yes, thank you, Anstris. All right, we're going to go on to materials management. I sent out some information about the New Haven Solid Waste and Recycling Authority Recycling Day, which is going to be October 24th at the Truman School. There will be document shredding, mattress recycling, electronics recycling, and textile recycling. In the meantime, you know, you can go to the city waste transfer station and take most things there. I don't know if they do document shredding, but you can recycle mattresses and electronics and textiles there, among other things. And they're very nice about it. I went recently myself to check it out. So I recommend it. And I sent out links from Cheryl Baldwin, the DEP recycling expert. She has Facebook events every Tuesday morning. They're called Tuesday Trash Talks at 10. And you can join them or you can look at them on her Facebook page. And she also sent a link to YouTube in case you don't have Facebook, but she says the quality isn't as good. But I sent those out this afternoon. So everybody who got the links to the Zoom call should have gotten. If you scroll all the way down, you'll see all kinds of crazy information like that. Okay, soil. I think Kathy and I heard Lori Matthews and her committee talk about healthy soil initiatives the GC3 is working on. And I'll give you the address of the city recycling later, Iris. And so I urge everyone to check on the link to the governor's climate on the climate change, Governor's Council on Climate Change, and see if you agree with all of their recommendations. They've got recommendations about all kinds of things, but the healthy soil thing for forests and for every place, water bodies, is very important. So take a look at that. Let's see. Parks, is Kristen here? Yes, you are. Kristen.
Hi.
Hi, Lapa. Nice to see you, Lapa. Go ahead, Kristen. You're going to give us the parks report.
All right, so a couple of quick updates. You may remember, actually last year in August, the Board of Alders approved the plan to add a skate park at Scantlebury Park in the Dixwell neighborhood. So that was just completed at the very beginning of the month. They did an opening ceremony, and I live right across from the park and have seen people using it every single time I pass by. So that's great news. The community really came out and, you know, argued for the park, and it's being utilized, I'd say, even more than expected. And then I'm glad, thank you for joining us, Pat Wallace. Pat has more information on this, and I'll leave most of the details to the new business section, but we will be discussing a land swap, which has gone through, is going through, or Pat will give us more information on the status of it. But essentially, what will happen is the Kensington Playground in the Dwight neighborhood will be dissolved. The idea is to build more housing there. And from what I gather, there are basically, you know, two different arguments. One, finding the affordable housing offered by the development to be, you know, more important to the community. And the other side, to which I admit I'm partial, being emphasizing the importance of open space, of green space, particularly in an environmental justice neighborhood, particularly in a neighborhood that will be undergoing a lot of other construction projects in the near future. So I'll leave the rest of that to the new business portion of the meeting.
Great. Thank you, Kristen, and thank you for the report on Scantlebury Park, and thank you for living near there so that we get the update. And I'm so glad people are really utilizing it after there was so much of an outcry in both directions about it. Okay, let's see. Lights. I know we have updated the lighting, the outdoor lighting ordinance. I've noticed some regularly spaced orange painted circles on the Yale D field behind my house, and I'm guessing they're going to put light poles up to use for on that field at night. And I'm hoping that they will not be running those lights all the time, and I'm hoping that they will not be pointed toward our house. I know athletic facilities have an exemption in our city ordinance, and I really think we need to get rid of that, because I did not buy a house in a residential neighborhood to have commercial lights shining in my window, and neither did Jeannie. And I don't understand how these things can happen without our being told about any of this. I find it really distressing, and it decreases my property value, and it is very stressful for all of us, not to mention the wildlife that live here, the birds and everything else. Anyway, very upset about that, and I hope somebody can tell me what's going on. I have emailed our alderman, Daryl Brekeen, and Adam Marchand to find out what is going on, and they have not responded to me. So I will keep you posted, but we are going to have to do something about not letting athletic facilities have an exemption to the city ordinance, and I hope that will be okay with people who don't want to see wasted electricity from lights that shine all night long. as it is, there's a new field house on the field behind my house, and Yale left all the lights shining brightly for about 2 months. It took me during the pandemic, it took me 2 phone calls or 2 emails to Karen King, the community engagement person at Yale, to try and get them turned off because they were wasting so much energy and it was just awful. Anyway, I will get off my soapbox now and talk about noise. And I've asked Alder Richard Furlow about the helicopters that have become more and more frequent in the 18 years I've lived here, and they stopped for a few months during the pandemic, but now they are picking up again. We have a lot of helicopter traffic, and helicopters do not have any noise controls, and they fly really low over our houses. And yesterday there were 2 of them at the same time at about 4 in the afternoon, and I was out gardening, and it's very stressful. And I did not live here to be on the flight path of Sikorsky Airport, so I'm hoping we can get that under control too. Anyway, that's that. If anyone has any other committee things to report, speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay, hearing none, we're going on to old business. So we are, we seem to be permanently involved in having the Wheeler Street Transfer Station ask for permission to do more. And they got their last, they knew that we, the whole city of New Haven, opposed their last application, which was to expand their physical plant and to take in municipal household waste, which is household garbage. And we knew they didn't, they knew we didn't like that, so they took their application back, and they recently filed an application just to take in municipal household waste, and which is called municipal solid waste. And their application will be discussed at the City Plan Commission meeting September 16, 2020. The Environmental Advisory Council will be submitting a letter in opposition to that application. And I urge all of you to go sit on Wheeler Street in your car or walk over there and see what's going on. I have been there twice in recent weeks, and the first time I went, August 14th, I noticed the smell of garbage outside all the adjoining businesses and outside the houses up the hill. I filed an air quality complaint with DEEP, which resulted in a phone call asking me the details of my complaint, which were listed in my emails and I was a little bit distraught because I was told that we should file air quality complaints. And when I did it, it resulted in what I thought was an intimidating phone call asking me for details that I had already provided. Then I went back there yesterday, and instead of the awful garbage smell, there was the smell of a very strong chemical deodorizer, like you would smell in a bus station, except it was outside, outside of people's houses. And I'm sorry, but the plan, in my opinion, the plan they have for covering up the garbage smell does not eliminate it. It just substitutes one noxious odor for another, which is not okay. And anyway, we are, I hope everyone in the city is going to do everything we can to make sure that we do not end up taking in putrescible wet waste from other towns, other municipalities nearby, because we do not need to do that. Anybody have any comments about that? Okay.
I just have a thought. I'm wondering what the chemicals are that are used as a screening chemical.
There's like a 200 plus page application that was filed. And I sent out the link with the stuff I sent out for this meeting. And if you read through it, you can see their plan for odor.
So the masking chemical, because that could in and of itself be.
It's toxic. It's got to be.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. It smells toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Laura, can I add a comment?
Yes. course.
So we talked about Wheeler for I think over a year now, and in the past I asked the city engineer Giovanni Zinn if there's any benefits or revenue. I mean, he's the engineer, he's not the financial person. He said that there's none that he knows of, and this could be a question for the city. So why would you haul in garbage? And from my one of the problems with hauling in trucks in a neighborhood is the huge impact on the streets themselves, the noise, the air pollution just from the trucks, not only from the garbage. And for example, in Bloomfield, where they have the bottling company, the trucks are a nuisance. And I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They have fracking, and the communities that are impacted from the fracking, a lot of the problems are from the trucking and from the truck traffic. And I think that goes a little bit under the radar. And it is, now with the CG3, with everything being looking into the impact on the less privileged citizens. I think this is like, it's not in my neighborhood, so I don't care. And it really impacts the less privileged citizens in New Haven. That's my understanding of this.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. All right. Well, we will work on that. And please, everybody who can, come to the City Plan Commission meeting on September 16th. I think the meetings start at 6:00. The public portion starts at 7:00. And I believe there will be the public will be able to comment on the Wheeler Street Transfer Station at this meeting, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm mistaken, can Stacy Davis tell me I'm mistaken?
The public hearing is scheduled for September 16th at 7 p.m. That's right. And you can submit written testimony to me or Jenna Montesano. Right. And an agenda will be sent out to the CPC distribution list a week before the meeting. While the special permit hearing is scheduled for the 16th, that doesn't necessarily mean that it will be held on the 16th. Plenty of hearings receive requests for extension or to be tabled to another date. So just as an FYI, the initial hearing is currently scheduled for the 16th. And we will share any updates should they arise.
Thank you.
I do have a question on this. I saw there were many people, Marge Shamsky, the city, that have been very, have analyzed the application very closely. And something that would be very helpful to me, and I think other people, would be, this company has filed many applications. Could you give us a brief idea of, if there are any material changes to the current application from previous ones, or is it essentially the same application?
I think I can answer that. I just want to be careful because it is part of the regulatory process. There haven't been major technical changes to the applications. The applicant did submit an application to the commission approximately a year ago that included the construction of a new building. They have since decided not to pursue that plan, so their current application includes retrofitting the existing building. That's probably the biggest material change. Other than that, more minor and miscellaneous changes have been made to the stormwater management system on site and the relocation of a few of the existing empty waste containers.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So I do want to add one thing. The last application they were planning on bringing in a huge, I think like $1 million new waste sorting recycling sorting machine. And that is not being done now because they would need to expand the building. And some of us during the spring saw a documentary on plastics and recycling. And in that documentary, near the end of the documentary, it was noted that one of those machines was trashed almost immediately after it was purchased because it didn't work. So I think, I personally feel that the promising of something like that was a smokescreen for what they really wanted, which was just to take in municipal solid waste, which is garbage. And I think they were going to do it to try to do it any way they could. Anstris, you have a question or a comment?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, that's my theory. All right. We're going to go on to English Station. Anstris, do you happen to have any update on English Station or Aisha? Do you?
Why don't we start with Aisha?
Hi.
Still here? Yep.
Yep, I'm still here. I was not in, all my favorite projects are on this, on your agenda tonight. I hadn't prepared anything specifically regarding with English Station, but we have been having ongoing meetings, both with Deep and with the owners to try and, bring the cleanup to a resolution. Right now, it's a complicated process. I don't want to misspeak on anything or get too into the details. And I would be happy to, put together a more coherent report on it. But basically, it's still, it's still been a series of conversations where, our goal is really to have the city have a seat at the table in this decision-making process as to what the final, cleanup plan is going to look like.
Great. We would love it if you would submit a short written report about where things stand now, because, some of us tried to get this process going months ago and we have been unable to get Deep to budge.
Yeah.
So any help you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Thanks. Anstris, do you have anything to add?
Absolutely. Oh. There should be a public meeting coming up. I know those are, there was a planned public meeting for UI to give an update on the progress. I think that's been, it was supposed to happen in August, and I'm not, it's still upcoming, and I'm sure I know Anstris has attended some of the prior public meetings on that. So
have I, but you know what? The public meetings do not get the job done somehow. We want the place cleaned up. We don't care. I mean, I know they're required to give public meetings, but all the public meetings do not help. We want action.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say at the public meetings, one of the central problems is that the public asks questions and we really don't get answers. And then they say they will follow up and post things on their website with the page that is required with the consent decree that they keep. But it really isn't there. So it just seems like a show rather than anything substantial. And neighborhood groups have asked UI to actually come to a joint meeting of the management teams, and that hasn't that invitation hasn't been accepted. Aisha, there was some a notice in the paper about a purported new idea for developing the site. Do you have any thoughts about that? There's so many things like this that come through and they get a little press and then they blow out to sea. So maybe
So what I want to, I'll just say this, you know, more generally, but really what we'd like to encourage is sort of higher levels of cleanup, you know, especially adjacent to impacted neighborhoods. You know, and also having the city be able to be a partner or have a voice in the level of cleanup that's expected.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the time frame for the cleanup.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important too. Be, you know, in all of the adjacencies. So that's very much a strong direction that the community has discussed with city officials, with DEEP, and in our meeting with the Attorney General's office. I guess that this new proposal that may or may not still be around was for energy production at the site. And I think that the what the community would like to see is some sort of new use there that really contributes to the community around it. And to have a, you know, another peaker plant, we, as you know, we fought very hard to try to keep the peaker plant we do have in town from coming, but it was an act of the legislature and wasn't something that really could be stopped, even though we're an environmental justice community. But we did manage to negotiate this in a very thorough way with help from Dr. David Brown, and we had some very strong leadership with the New Haven Environmental Justice Network, and we actually created a plan that had no net increase in pollution. So particularly after that tough fight, for someone to come in and propose another peaker plant is so blind to what the conditions are in New Haven for an environment and the people that live nearby. So I would hope that that would be something that both DEP and the city would reject outright and keep hold of the vision that we need a high level of cleanup to achieve it, to actually be able to use the site in new ways that can truly contribute to the life and vitality and needs of the neighborhoods nearby.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Anstris. Sorry, Aisha.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you very much, Anstris. I have not heard anything about proposed peaker plant or anything. Yeah. What we've seen is more of a residential reuse, which would obviously require a much higher level of cleanup. And I appreciate everything that Anstris said. And I think one of our goals is really to have much more meaningful community input into the use that's contemplated and then the level of cleanup to be informed by, what the community imagines would be a good use, you know, to serve them. So, but I'm happy to put together a more comprehensive update at a future meeting. I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else about English Station? No. Okay. I know, Lynn, I know you have some questions about safety clean systems from, I think, February. I have them in mind to ask the people at Safety Clean Systems, and I will get back to you. Sorry, things have been a little crazy. I feel like I've been holding my breath for about 5 months. Let's see. Coastal land use evaluation and plan request that the Environmental Advisory Council sent to the City Plan Department and the Zoning Department. I know you're taking our request under consideration, and we appreciate it. And as soon as you get back to us, we will be happy. Thank you.
Great. So would you like us to do a very short update?
Yes.
We are with that? Okay, great. So we have, so the request was really to, you know, to do a planning process around land use. And obviously the two prior topics, are a great segue to this, to really see what the highest and best use of our coastal area is we're lucky in New Haven that we actually have a very large amount of park and public access to our coast, which is different than many other coastal areas. But we do really need to, the areas that are not public right now, we really do need to take into consideration what the best use is given both some of the environmental justice issues that were touched on by the prior examples, as well as climate change impacts. So I'm going to, Stacy's going to talk a little bit at about, this is very much an iterative process. I'll just explain where we are in the kind of process. And in a way, it's a little bit backwards, but that's governed by some of the timelines around our CRS program. So we're actually, we have a draft of a new floodplain ordinance that we're just having reviewed right now, and Stacy can talk about that a little bit more. And we're also preparing a scope for a more comprehensive plan that would both take into account, you know, some of the new climate projections, but also, you know, have more of an environmental justice lens. We have the last coastal manual that was draft was in 2006. So obviously there's been, you know, a lot of changes both in climate change projections as well as, you know, developments in New Haven. Stacy, do you want to talk a little bit about the ordinance and the types of things that we're looking at in the ordinance?
Yeah, absolutely. So so my update will be fairly straightforward and technical, but essentially how we've kind of scoped out updates to the coastal management program are in kind of two big or two phases. The first phase is guided by requirements through FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program, which requires cities to occasionally update their floodplain management ordinance requirements. So the city CRS program, which I'm fairly certain most of you are aware of, I think every year we usually come by one of the meetings and give an update, but essentially through participating in the community rating system program through FEMA, the city of New Haven essentially participates in a host of public outreach activities that remind residents of how to prepare for storms and floods and how to protect their property before, after, and during a storm, a flood event. And the city right now has the highest rating in the state, which gives residents a 15% discount on their annual flood insurance costs through the National Flood Insurance Program. So it's an automatic discount that is applied should a resident purchase flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program. So this year, the city has a five-year audit with the CRS staff through FEMA, and that also include representatives from DEEP and the National Flood Insurance Program. So in order to be fully prepared for that recertification cycle in January, the city is required to update its floodplain damage prevention ordinance so that it is consistent with the state's building code. So some of those requirements include mostly defining certain standards such as freeboard, BFE requirements, dry proofing versus wet proofing, incorporating flood vent inspection requirements, and considering adding highway VE zone regulations into the ordinance as well. So I think I'll stop there. So essentially, over the next couple of months, the city plan department will have a couple of documents to put before the Board of Alders that include basically just bringing the existing ordinance into compliance with the state building code, and also incorporating a couple of CERCA recommendations regarding sea level rise over the next couple of years. So that might include raising the BFE requirements for building in the floodplain from potentially the one feet, which is a current requirement, to 2 or 3 feet. Based on what other cities are doing that are similar to New Haven, and or based on FEMA and CERCA projections. So we'll start the Board of Alder process for those changes in the next couple of months, and we can certainly come before you as well with a summary of those changes. They will be pretty minor, and there will only be a couple of them. And the anticipation is that the city, when we hire a consultant to help us do the larger comprehensive waterfront strategy process, that we'll be able to take a larger look at how we can update the ordinance so that it's more comprehensive and reflects the goals that are stated in our waterfront strategy.
Thanks, Stacey. I think that hit upon most points, and we're happy to take any questions. I also wanted to point out that some of us have also been active on the GC3 and trying to. So we're interested in seeing how those recommendations come out, but also trying to advocate, a real urban perspective, because some of our coastal issues are very different than, you know, our neighbors, which have more, you know, single family, smaller scale construction, residential, whereas, you know, New Haven is historically built up. But happy to take any questions.
I missed part of what is it mandatory for people that live very close to the coast to have the flood insurance? I just learned from Branford that they go half a mile in and it's mandatory to purchase the flood insurance, and it's very expensive. They don't necessarily consider elevation, which I think it's just, you know, you cannot, I think it just makes it simpler. And then down the road, well, I guess I'm concerned, what's the commitment of the city if, you know, to invest in coast that is, could be an in danger in the next 10, 20 years, or actually with each storm that comes. So
that's a great question. So flood insurance is required if you live in a special flood hazard area. And I'm sorry, and your second question was the city's commitment regarding
these buildings or houses that are in a it could be flood zone, but just, you know, like close with water.
Sure. So I don't know, Aisha, if you'd like to speak to that, but there are a handful of potential projects to help protect the shoreline.
Now, I don't want to cut this conversation short, but I think this is an entire meeting's worth of discussion, and we still have a very long agenda. And we have discussed this before at Environmental Advisory Council meetings, and we thank you very much for all the plans you have presented to us. And I don't know if you saw the First Street Foundation's countrywide flood mapping zone, flood mapping tool, First Street Foundation. You can Google it if you didn't see it already. But I think we should table the rest of this discussion for another time, and maybe we should have a whole meeting devoted to the coastal land use and evaluation and plan and the flood plans, because I think it's very important and there are lots of questions all of us have. Would that be okay, Iris? And would that be okay, Aisha and Stacey? Yeah,
absolutely. And there certainly will be a public outreach process as part of any plan going forward.
Great. And Iris, if you have specific questions you want to ask Stacy or Aisha privately, I know they will be happy to answer them, because I know those questions impact upon your work in the Water Council. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Sure. No problem.
Okay. So our educational initiatives are on hold because of COVID. I don't know if we find some way to encourage the teachers to use the sustainability B materials. They could do it over Zoom. I have sent them out to many teachers, and I think they were all so flummoxed by the COVID situation that they forgot what was going on. But Esther Armand had a Yale intern compile a whole list of questions for a sustainability B, and she got a grant. And anyway, we will table that discussion for later, and we're going to go on to city and state sustainability initiatives. Don Henning, do you have anything to report about the New Haven Climate and Sustainability Framework? Okay. I'm not sure she's here right now, but I know.
I am here. No, I don't have a specific update at this time.
Okay, great. You know, if anybody's working on any projects that are listed on that, the climate and sustainability on that framework, you can always tell Dawn. And if you want to work on any of those issues, you can feel free to work on them. Everyone will be happy if you do. And if you need help, ask Dawn, ask us, ask somebody. We'll help you. Now,
actually, we can give a quick, if Alyssa is there, she can give a quick update on an urban ag.
Oh, good.
Project that she's working on. Alyssa, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Okay. We did recently, my division recently did get funding, which is pretty exciting. There will be press releases coming out about it, so more information will be available through that. But we did receive two USDA grants out of their new Office of Urban Ag and Innovative Production. And one of the grants is under their composting projects. So I am partnered with Gather New Haven, Peels and Wheels, and Common Ground. And that's work on developing a community composting collaborative, actually, and working to kind of test fit possible citywide scale up of municipal composting. So that's one grant. The other grant is a much larger grant. And so the other one is about $90,000. This one is $500,000 grant. This one we're proposing developing the first New Haven Urban Ag Master Plan. And so both of these, and that will be a very community-driven process. And again, we just got notice of these grants within the last week. So this, you know, we still have to meet with USDA, figure out all the details, and a lot of this information will be forthcoming. But just know that now we have some resources behind this, and they fit in nicely with the climate and sustainability framework and the work that had been previously proposed in the food and land use and ag section. That's really exciting. I'll keep you posted.
Yes, I agree. That is very exciting, Letha. Thank you so much. Congratulations. I love composting. I am thrilled about this. Yes. And Kathy Faye and Lynn Bonnet both put their congrats in your, yes, in the chat box. Thank you for working on this. Thank you for doing Urban Ag. I've been getting a farm share from Common Ground, and I love it. And I have been burying my compost in my backyard.
Awesome.
So I'm going to burst in for a second. It's Kathy. While we're still on sustainable CT, when I Heart My Home got its start, it got seed funding from a donation drive through the Sustainable CT Community Match Fund. And I just want to recommend that if anybody sees any in any of the categories, especially ones that New Haven isn't doing, they are doing a second round of the community, of the CT community match fund. So if there's any projects you want to do that are new projects, please look to Sustainable CT to get some support. They double your whatever donations you get toward your project. This is especially for grassroots stuff.
Great. Thank you for sharing that, Kathy. Okay. So as Kathy already mentioned, the Governor's Council on Climate Change is working really hard on draft recommendations for public review to be submitted to the governor for fixes for climate issues. And Kathy, I know, has been working very, very hard on them. And I have been just listening to some of the things going on in some of the meetings. And I really admire everybody who's working on this. I've seen Aisha at meetings. I've seen Stacy at meetings. I saw Iris at least one meeting. Thank you, everybody. I think I saw Lynn at a meeting. Thank you, everybody, for working on this stuff. And Dawn, a lot of people have been working on this stuff. I do hope that this is not just aspirational and that some of these things will be actually acted upon, because while people are busy working on these recommendations, so many people are taking advantage of this time when people can't make a lot of noise about it to do great damage to the environment, and it saddens me greatly. So I hope we don't let anyone get away with that, and I hope these recommendations to the governor are taken very seriously. And I sent a link to everybody who's on our email list. I sent a link to, I sent out the link Kathy Faye sent me so that you can review all the draft reports. And you don't have to review every single one of them, but if you see a subject you're interested in, you can go and look at that report. And I think you'll find it fascinating, and you might have some really good ideas they haven't thought about, because as Aisha said, we from New Haven have a very different perspective than some of the people who are in different kinds of municipalities or communities in Connecticut. So please try and look at those reports sometime. And thank you in advance for everybody who reads any of this documentation. I know it's a lot of words. Any other comments about the Governor's Council on Climate Change? Okay, well, if you need the link, you can email me or let me know or let Kathy Faye know, and we'll get you the link. We're going on to new business. I'm going to take things out of order. We're gonna let Pat Wallace and Olivia Martson talk to us about the proposed Neuroscience Center garage and the land swap for the park in a minute. I'm just gonna tell you about the other things, the other new business that we have. So Viveka Morris is going to help us get our city ordinances up, our city zoning ordinances up to date to prevent bird strikes. We're gonna work on that next month, we hope. So stay tuned for that. I sent out the link to the Conservation Law Foundation's fuel terminal lawsuits in the with the Zoom links for this meeting, so you can check into those. You can read the documentation. Lynn, the New Haven Free Public Library. For according to one of the library someone alerted us that two men were trying to spray Mitchell Library with weed killer. And this person stopped that from happening. But according to a library administrator, a company had been hired by the building superintendent to spray all the library buildings with weed killer. And everyone is denying they did it. I can't figure out who hired the people, what product was used, when it was done, and I hope someone can tell me. I've been working on it and no one will fess up, and I'm going to have to file a report with DEEP, and I don't know if they'll be able to find out either, but I am distressed that this happened in New Haven, where we have a voluntary lawn chemical ban, and that even though we can't go to the libraries right now, there is green space around every library almost, except for Ives Library downtown. And it's not good for even the library staff to be exposed to this stuff, and I don't understand who at the city is responsible for this, but I really would like to know. So if anyone who works for the city can tell me, you can tell me privately, you don't have to fess up in the middle of this. I want it stopped. I want to know who did it. I want to know what was sprayed so I can alert the library staff what they should be watching out for. The company that is the law firm that is leading the class action lawsuit against Monsanto for glyphosate and dicamba has just sent out a notice stating that it takes more than 30 years sometimes to figure out what your exposure to, what illnesses were caused by your exposure to pesticides, to these long chemicals. And I don't want anyone to get sick in 30 years and find out that it was because of that. Anyway, okay, I will stop talking about that. The PSEG power plant application, Lynn Bonnet asked if anybody knows about the community benefits agreement that if the terms were carried out, and I have not gotten an answer about that yet. And I think Giovanni Zinn is the one who negotiated that. So maybe somebody can tell Lynn and me at some point what that community benefit, I don't even know how to find the documentation for a community benefits agreement, but if you have it in the city plan department and we could know what the community benefits agreement entails, we would be delighted to know. And anyway, I don't know. Aisha, do you know anything about that? Okay, well, maybe she is gone at the moment. But anyway, we will work on that and see if we can find out. Let's see.
This is Lynn. So that happened like 5 to 10 years ago, and I honestly don't remember asking you for that information, but I know that a lot of the money was used to retrofit the garbage trucks in New Haven with particulate filters.
Okay, great.
They were supposed to update the air toxics inventory for New Haven, and that's what we never heard about. So,
about
to clarify that,
updating the air toxics inventory for New Haven.
Yeah.
What is that?
City Plan has a document that was done in 2004 listing all of the sources of pollutants in our air.
Okay.
And it used to be on their website. I think it might have been archived because it's kind of old now.
Okay.
But they Giovanni said they were going to use some of that community benefit money, $10,000 of it, to update the air toxics inventory. Okay. And Environmental Justice never really heard about that. And I think he said, well, it's on the EPA website. So, you know, we never found it. So.
Okay, thank you. You're right. You didn't ask me to find this information out. You notified me that PSEG had applied for a new permit. Anstruth wants to know.
It's related to the community benefit agreement. It's a totally different thing.
Okay, then I'm confused.
Yeah, I just heard, I'm sorry, I misspelled Peaker the first time. I think that Lynn is right. This is, it could even be more than 10 years ago, but there needs to be follow-up to find out what the conditions are now that it's been in operation. And you know, beyond the retrofitting of the garbage trucks, there were also new rules on the type of fuel mix that could be used in the old 1970s plant, particularly on certain dates of the year. They could only use gas, and sometimes they had to shut that one down. There were notes in the agreement about particularly December and August that are our highest pollution rate periods, that restricted, that no number two fuel oil could be used at all, and that if pollution rates went above a certain point, they couldn't run parts of the plant. So there's been an operating or management system in place for a couple of years. And I think that what we need to do is hear from them about how they've monitored it and how it works.
Yeah, if I can interrupt a little bit. So PSEG applied for a Title V permit renewal, lumping all of those individual permits into one. They also were reportedly active in selling them. And Chris Schweitzer found an article in New Jersey that PSEG was going to sell their fossil fuel plants in Connecticut, that's Bridgeport and New Haven, in the interest of generating power from renewable sources. So that I was trying to find out more about that, and I haven't. So, I mean, in terms of how it affects New Haven, this is like a, you know, a major institution in our harbor that isn't telling us very much about what they're planning to do. So I think there's some questions that we could ask.
Okay, so Dawn and Aisha, are you there? Maybe could you arrange for a public meeting? If I mean, I know we didn't ask for a hearing. I know the date, the deadline to ask for a hearing was a few days ago, but if the public wants to know, I don't know anything about this. So even, I'm not even asking the right questions, but Lynn and Anstris clearly do. So if we could at least direct some questions to PSEG, and if they could answer them, that would be good. But if some of us could meet with them, that would probably be better. Does that sound like what a good idea, Lynn and Anstris?
Yeah, and I suppose we could have a local public hearing, even if we've, and I hadn't really gotten a lot of news or comment about this in my email system. I think it's unfortunate that we've missed a hearing at DEEP, but I think that it could be something that could still happen here. You know, maybe ask the Board of Alders to have hearing.
Yes.
That may be, it's important enough. It's a citywide issue. It has particular impact on the East Shore and Fairhaven.
Great. So maybe you could ask the alder who represents, is that Sal? Whoever the alder is who represents that neighborhood, maybe that alder could request just a meeting to answer questions, not a controversial, you know, not a confrontational meeting.
It could be a public information meeting at the Board of Alders, and we have someone from DEEP and PSEG attend. Right.
Yes. Would that, who was going to be responsible for taking this on?
I'll talk to Sal DiCola.
Thank you. He seems to have disappeared for a few minutes. Yep. Okay. All right. The other few things I have on the agenda are better sewage spill notification, and I saw that the CGA had some bill about that. I think we'll table that till later, and water overuse, which Iris can address later and already did address partly, but I think we should now talk about the Kensington Playground and the Yale Neuroscience Garage, if Olivia and Pat are still with us. They might have disappeared for a minute. Because I saw that they walked away.
No, we're here.
Oh, good.
The question is, which one do you want to do first?
Up to you.
Which one do you want to do first?
It's up to you.
Okay, thank you. Let's do the Kensington Park first. And you can see that on Olivia's feed, it's actually Jane Comans who's there, and there is a member of that immediate block who wants to speak. So, Olivia, why don't you and Jane and the resident take a few moments. I think we also have Josh Randall, who's a Yale student who is going to be prepared to give you a very brief summary of some environmental and economic issues that relate to this. And I will also mention some things from a housing perspective. But I think, Olivia, you wanted to lead off here. Can you hear this, Olivia? Go ahead. We cannot hear you. You have to unmute yourself.
Hey, how's now?
Good.
Good.
Good to hear me. Okay. I just want to let everyone know we're here at Kensington Playground, and it's a really a gem of an oasis. I think you got the slides that we shared with you about why this is so important. And the residents really don't have any play space at all. I mean, this one we need to get the sprinkler pad working, or a new one, or some toddler stuff. So I wanted to share it with a resident. She's right next to me with the mask, and see what she says about why she wants to keep the park.
Hi, my name is Anita. I'm a resident here, and I've been a resident here for over 35 years. And every other neighborhood seems to have a play area, playground, and when it comes to funding or anything that's done with this park, Park and Rec has kept it clean for the past semi-years, but there has been nothing here. The sprinkler system hasn't worked. It's always a problem getting it fixed, and they don't have anything else. They had no investment in this park for years, and it's sad because the kids don't have anything to do, and they always speak about violence and things like that or whatever, and if they had those things here, people would respect children, I think, in that aspect a little more, and it would be safer. So that's my spiel on the park.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say one thing, everybody, that the reason why this park is so important is that there really isn't any green space here. So this is really it. And we would like to improve both parks, the Chapel Day Park, that could be an adult park. It could be also an improved basketball park area. It could have chess boards. But this one here is ideal because it's a one-way street. It's a half a block from the Grimes Center in Yale and the hospital, and it could be used for multiple purposes. So I don't think it should be sold for a dollar to community builders. They have a very bad track record of they don't maintain their properties. And, you know, if they want to buy another parcel, we could find another parcel for them, but this isn't it. So we're going to ask the Board of Aldermen to not approve this project, and we're all going to go to the community development meeting on September 16th on the Zoom call. So I hope you can write a letter of support in saving the park for us, this council. It's very important. And I'd like to refer to Josh now because he has some kind of technical statistical things about trees. Now, the trees here are about 100 years old, you know, 75 to 100. So if anyone is an arborist, we'd love you to come out and give us the species of these trees. But we are going to, not let this property be sold for a dollar to community builders, TCB. And I try to look at our slides that we gave you because it also talks about the health impacts of this neighborhood. Okay, thanks.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, so I'm Josh. I'm a first-year PhD student at Yale. I study plants. I've done a lot of ecophysiology before this. I actually do have a TCIA registration, though, so I have the minimum level needed to be a partial arborist. So that park, though, like Olivia mentioned, there's a large number of trees. They're all really old. And they're also almost entirely all plane trees, which are related to the Native American sycamore. And so because of that, they're actually really, really helpful for the neighborhood. They're really good at sucking up pollutants from the air. They're really good at taking carbon and putting it into the ground. So specifically, the older the trees get, the more carbon that they're sequestering into the ground. They're reducing the total amount of carbon dioxide in the air. They're reducing the heat island effect in that area. And then subsequently, that's going to improve people's well-being and reduce air conditioning costs and increase property values in general. In addition, that space also acts as a water filtration site, so it's improving water.
oh, I'm sorry.
You're good. And as a number of the other residents have mentioned, it acts as a spot for socialization. Numerous studies have come out showing that parks are essential for children to be able to socialize correctly and to grow up to be, responsible members of their community. So without this park, we're losing out on the chance for improved air quality in an area that, as Pat will talk about later, is in danger of becoming even more and more more dangerous for the residents there, as well as losing out the chance for these children in the area to have access to a play space and to develop socially.
Thank you. Okay, who's next?
I'm next. So just to wrap this up, the process that was used around the decision to make a gift of the park to Community Builders was lacking. Community Builders itself acknowledges that while they did do some outreach to their own tenants, nothing was done by them to reach out to let the larger community know. The Parks Department did not put a sign up in the park to notify people about the fact that this was under consideration or when they could have had the opportunity to attend Park Commission meetings or other deliberative bodies that have looked at this so far. In other words, as far as I'm concerned, there was really a complete failure of democracy about this. So a few of us, when we became aware of it, decided to just go knock on doors and talk to people. And we did that 2 weekends ago, and we found a lot of people in the neighborhood who really were concerned about it. You can look at the PowerPoint presentation and see the 15 or so people that turned out this past Saturday in the rain, mind you, to do a park cleanup, which was really very much needed. People really do value the park. Not everyone loves the park. There were a couple of people in the Community Builders' large brick property that fronts on Chapel Street at the corner of Kensington who frankly hate the park because they say there is crime and drug dealing that goes on there. They have young kids. They're very upset about the fact that the water element has not been working and that nobody has bothered to put any other kind of child-friendly thing in the park. But those folks were in a minority. I will say that every doorbell in that building that we tried was broken. And to me, that's indicative of things. It's not a complete statement. I wouldn't in any way try to say that. But you know, you can't even go and talk to people there because the doorbells don't work. So there's a long history. If you look in the New Haven Independent, you'll see past meetings where people in the community did speak up repeatedly about problems with the Community Builders. I myself have a long background in both affordable housing and supportive housing. I have spent most of my, not all, but most of my social work career working on those issues. I'm very much in favor of enhancing the supply of housing to meet that most basic human need. It's not possible to have any kind of a life if you don't have a place to live. But this is a very dense neighborhood already, and green space is essential. One of the people from the neighborhood who's lived there most of his life, who came out last night to the DCMT meeting, said that it is it's wrong, and it is too frequently the case that in neighborhoods that have a high number of people of color, low-income people, happiness is just not even taken into account. The fact that this park makes people happy, that four little boys were out there last Sunday morning, there was a church service in the park because a faith community that, because of COVID, can't gather in its faith community building, has been doing weekly worship services there on Sunday morning. The park is heavily used. You go by there any weekday. People are sitting on the benches. The park is really quite nicely landscaped. It's really a treasure. There isn't anything else like it in that neighborhood, which is my neighborhood. I live two blocks away. And the park is has not been the focus for Community Builders of any kind of programming that I've been able to find out about. So much could be done with that park that would be life enhancing. So we would really ask that that your council please consider a resolution opposing the sale of the park to be conveyed to the Board of Alders and the mayor. And it'd sure be fine to provide support for the idea of increasing affordable housing, but not to do it on this site. The swap site, as described at the Park Commission meeting, is actually supposed to be on the latest, and you know, the city's working hard to try to find an alternative spot, but what they have in mind at the moment is a spot on Winchester Avenue beside a bar. The hope is that the owner of the bar will, I guess, sell that property to a daycare, home daycare provider who's well regarded in the neighborhood, but there's no deal there. There's no, from what was said, there's no agreement to do that. And Winchester Avenue is not in the Dwight neighborhood. It's far away. So that may benefit some neighborhood, but it sure isn't going to benefit the Dwight neighborhood. Park and Day is a very different place than this space is. So, yes.
Pat, you want us to introduce Mrs. Matt? She's here.
Mrs. Mack has just joined us. She lives directly across the street. She knew nothing about this plan to sell the park. She has lived there for 51 of her 54 years, owns her home, and is coming out, even though she has health issues herself, because she wants to say something to you.
Okay. Hi, Mrs. Mack.
Olivia, unmute yourself.
How about now? Did I do it?
Good. Yes. Mrs. Mack.
Can you hear me?
Your time. Yes, bring Mrs. Mack to the mic.
Okay, you're to the mic. Just say.
Well, the kids used to be in the water park.
Can you come?
They used to play ball and what else they used to do? They used to, the water always been on until a certain, you know, time a year, and then they cut it off, and then, but
they haven't returned it.
They didn't cut it on the last two or three years, and they said it was something wrong with the, what is this
plumbing
thing here?
Plumbing.
Plumbing, but they lied. I'm not trying to be funny, because people know that they always say, oh, it's broke, or they say, oh, it's something wrong with the witch call, but they didn't, because the kids used to be out here playing, and then they'd be playing basketball, not basketball, but soccer, or playing football, and then they got to where it just got where
it's still good. We can make it better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay.
All right. So Aisha, are you still here? And do you know anything about what's going on with this park? Aisha?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm aware of it. I'm really, it's really a, an arrangement between LCI and parks. So I don't want to
comment
specifically on this.
Okay.
But it did go to city plan, and city plan approved it.
Correct.
So,
Stacy, do you have something to say about it?
Other than the applicant did receive approval for the new construction on the parks parcel with parks and LCI permission from the commission.
Okay. So I understand that the Parks Commission voted in June 3-3 with one person abstaining, one commissioner abstaining. So how is a 3-3 vote a vote in favor of this? I don't get that. Seems like a tie to me.
It was brought back again in July, and it was brought back again in August, and it did pass.
Got it.
The chair of the Park Commission instructed LCI not to bring any further such proposed swaps before the Park Commission, and was somewhat dismayed based on what he said
to hear that immediately following the Park Commission meeting, it was going immediately to city plan. I think it's important not to, I think it is important to both say that this process has not been democratic without necessarily questioning the motives of the people who are doing it. City plan is trying to do, LCI is trying to do what it considers to be its responsibility for the city to create more affordable housing. We just think that this is a really bad way of going thus, which this neighborhood, both the developer and LCI have felt that bringing it to the management team was sufficient. I don't think so. I don't think that reflects best practices in the housing industry, which I know because I've been part of it. And even if it wasn't legally required, it was the right thing to do. It isn't right for Mrs. Mack and everybody else that we've talked to be taken by surprise to find out this is being taken. There is also not a really good playscape anywhere around. There are more than 2,500 school bus stops within a 2-mile radius of the St. Raphael campus. There are loads of children on this block and there are loads of children in the neighborhood. And I live 2 blocks away. There's a baby downstairs. Her parents have to walk over to Scantlebury or, you know, someplace, go to Edgewood Park. There's nothing really right here. And this park would be a lovely setting for a real playscape. So I just think it's the right thing in the wrong place.
Yeah. Don't most playscapes have fences surrounding them so that only little kids can go in? Often in parks, I know they do. I mean, maybe that is a possibility to put up a fence to keep the ne'er-do-wells out and to protect the children so that
fences,
the people...
Fences.
Hi, everybody.
Fences can be part of an overall effective strategy for a city park. I have the smallest city park next to my house, and it does have a fence around it, and it's really important for those of us who are the neighbors who voluntarily maintain it, that it is possible to either lock it open or lock it closed at times in consultation with parks and with the police. And we work closely with them when problems arise, which they do because it's an urban park.
Okay. Olivia, you want to say something? You're muted.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. I think that what we want to do is if they want to build some more housing somewhere, you know, we can work with, they can find another site. So this site is the wrong site for this, and we need to improve both parks, Chapel and Day, and this site. And, you know, it's just another bad urban planning process that, you know, we're in the 21st century, and, you know, children need places to play. And it doesn't make sense. We will, you know, to push this. I mean, Community Builders wants to do this project because they want money to fix the other properties that they have. They have 238 units. Okay. Or whatever.
So this is my suggestion. Kristen, who heads our parks committee, will work on a letter for the Environmental Advisory Council with all the important reasons for this, and we will get it to you for your approval, and then we will get it to our members for their approval, if that's okay with you, Kristen.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. We really need your help here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll certainly draft the letter. If I may add one more thing, my takeaway from this is that we might like to consider in the future strengthening the law a bit so as to require at least notice, if not input from the community, but notice to be posted actually in the park should a park be dissolved in New Haven.
Yes. Well, let's work on that too, Kristen. Thank you.
Could I add one thing?
Yes.
I just want to apologize to Josh. I wasn't muted. And when I read Iris's comment, could we double the cost and get it for $2? I just laughed too long. loud, so sorry about good. That.
We're glad that made you laugh.
But what the other something else to consider for the letter and for you is at last night's meeting, one alder said that she would notify people in her ward, and this is right between wards, and it means only people in her ward would get notified. And the thing that is most important to look at here is actually a quarter mile radius from the park. That's really the catchment area, particularly for children. And you look out that can walk and ride a bike. So in terms of, planning for health and environment, that's actually one of the critical things. I think the street is so quiet because it's a one-way street that even though it's had things for kids, it hasn't been as important to have a fence as, let's say, the children's park on Worcester Street.
I understand that, but if the neighbors in the adjoining housing development are upset, then we want to give them some reason to not want to advocate for this park and to want to take agency of it.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to be the environmental advisory council that goes into a neighborhood and, pushes our weight around. We want to be with the neighbors. We want to do what's best for the whole community. You get my drift.
Yeah.
Fence, not fence, whatever. If they just need a hedge around the thing, whatever it takes, we'll try and work on it. And I know Kristen will lead the charge because now Kristen is an expert, having dealt with Scantlebury Park and the people on both sides of that issue. Right. So,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Olivia. Okay.
Thanks. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
You ready for the hospital?
Ladies in the park. Pat, are we going on to the Science Center garage now?
Yeah.
Okay. Onward.
So, that is a complex subject, and I know that you all are hearing about this at the end of a long meeting, so I'm going to boil it down to the bare essentials. So the hospital, again, is doing a good thing. It is creating a new neuro center on the site of the old St. Raphael's campus. However, in the course of it, they're also trying to solve parking problems, including some that have absolutely nothing to do with the neuro center. And so they're planning to tear down one perfectly good garage, rebuild that, build another garage, add more parking underneath the hospital campus. And all of this is going to add considerably to the volume of cars that come to these garage locations on a daily basis. And there are issues of various kinds with pollution, with traffic safety. There will also be 4 years of construction at this site, noise, more pollution from diesel trucks and heavy equipment and so on. So this is a very dense, low income residential neighborhood that has a hospital in the middle of it. And now there's a plan to do all of this work. The city's process included no health impact assessment, and so none was done. Raised with the mayor and with agency heads the fact that that's just wrong. And the city, particularly under Aisha's leadership right now, but with input from LCI, traffic and parking, and so on, is looking at best practices in health impact assessments. And the hope will be to be able to take the time and consideration to develop a new ordinance for the city that will require going forward, certainly with the input of this advisory council, I'm sure, an ordinance that will, when a project is certainly at this scale, and scale will be something that the ordinance will have to get in the weeds on, but that will require a health impact assessment. This 12%, the best information is that 12% of people in the neighborhood have asthma. Another study done by CARE suggests it may be as high as 18%. There's no specific pullout of data for asthma rates among children, but it's we had a Yale medical student who worked with us on the health impact just fact sheet that we put together. And his best estimate was that we just should use the existing 12% figure. If you look at where the school bus stops are, they're at intersections, and pollution is going to be generated by cars idling at those intersections, cars entering the garage, leaving the garage. And the kids are going to be standing at those bus stops, if we ever get back to normal life, at the same time that nurses and physicians are changing shifts in the morning and leaving shifts in the afternoon. There's a real significant health issue here, and it simply wasn't considered as part of the process. So we raised this. The hospital is very good at getting through city processes, and they really moved things right along. In the course of it, we talked to them. They said, okay, if you can get us a report by February 14th, they gave us 2 weeks to give them a written document that outlined our concerns. We met that deadline. Right after that, COVID came, and conversations that we'd been having with them were halted because we were talking with some of the very people who were dealing with that at the hospital. So as of today, actually, we have a date for a sit-down with the hospital on September 11th for an hour, in which we are expecting that they will finally give us feedback on the report that was prepared for us with our very considerable input by the Yale School of Architecture. That meeting will take place with the goal of, again, trying to recognize that while the hospital has all the approvals that it needs, we expect them, given the mission of the Yale New Haven healthcare system to create health, not worsen it, we are asking them to voluntarily consider the concerns we've raised and to voluntarily reconceptualize their approach to traffic and parking. We don't know what they'll do about that, and we have waited patiently, engaged in a rational, collaborative process of dialogue to try to get them to respond to these concerns. So we are also, in addition to the architecture school, Dr. Rob Dubrow from the public health school is one of our advisors. Anstruss has also been a helpful advisor to us. The facts are on our side, and we are holding the hospital accountable, even though the city process hasn't done that sufficiently from the perspective of our neighborhood. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Olivia is also quite knowledgeable. Jane Comans, who's in the back there, Anstruss. I would suggest you direct your question to me, and I can point it to whichever of them seems like the right one based on people's interests and experience.
Does anyone from City Plan have anything to say about this? And then Iris has a question.
Sure, I'm happy to address that. So we've been meeting with this group, and as Pat represented, we've done a study on health impact assessments and how they might be used as part of the site plan application process for projects of a certain size. We're just about to wrap up that research. This is a fairly new tool. Not many cities use it. So we're, we've been talking with other municipalities around the country. Actually, when I say we, it's really our intern, Becca, who's been had this as her primary job for her time with us. But we should be wrapping up sort of at least a strategy for taking in health impact and health equity impact assessments as part of the development application. I do want to say that this is a project that did go through a public process, so there were some opportunities for public comment at the Board of Alders and also at the City Plan Commission. But in any case, I mean, we're generally
BOA.
We're sympathetic with the issues that were brought up by Pat. Okay.
So I'm just curious, the health assessment stuff, is that going to apply to this project or only projects going further, you know, going forward?
It will not apply to this.
No, I'm asking Aisha.
It will not apply to this. And Anstress just corrected me in that the City Planning Commission did not grant a public hearing. So that's correct. But there was one at the Board of Alders and in the zoning update process.
Because the zoning update process, because the zoning had to be changed to accommodate this large a structure in this neighborhood.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you know, I much like there were many projects when this went to the Board of Alders, some of the information about it, the hospital building itself were presented, but it really wasn't a complete set of plans that were shown early to everyone when they came to the Dwight management team. And they really didn't show images of what the garage would look like. So this is another example of a very faulted public process. I think that for all of you that know New Haven so well, some things to think about with this is that the total amount of parking that will be located basically between on those two corners with Chapel and George across Orchard, the total number of structures and our spaces will be about 256 parking spaces less than the Air Rights Garage. So if you imagine all of that Air Rights Garage dropped into this low-scale neighborhood with small streets, it's astounding. And so there's the air quality impact from small houses, old, that are placed close to the street with either no or very small front yards. That'll be enormous. And as Pat said, there's also the public safety. Even if everyone drove an electric vehicle, you still have that many more cars flooding streets that weren't built for this much traffic. And everyone in a car feels that they own the road. And that in itself will drastically increase traffic and safety problems and prevent people who have very few parks from taking walks and doing the healthy things that people need to be able to do, to feel not just that there's a walk light that after you wait a long time will let you cross the street, but that you have the freedom to move around and enjoy your neighborhood. That's a big part of life. It isn't just exercise. It's the psychological possession and comfort in place. And that's a big, big part of human health too, as is beauty and having a neighborhood that's coherent. It's a National Registered District. It's one of the neighborhoods that put a mark on the world becoming one early on. And we don't see either in the Kensington Park plan or in this any kind of way of working within that planning framework. It's unhealthy for people to see environments that are tattered or neglected or ignored, that and pushed against hard with things that are inappropriate. So the health impacts, it goes everything from lungs to mind, and the remedies that have been offered or to rebuild, it's about 20 intersections, really only suggests, it just means that you're putting in more technological solutions to something that can't be really solved that way. It creates its own problems. And that also shows how big the new problem will be of moving traffic through these streets.
Yes.
So okay. New Haven is going terribly backwards compared to other countries around the country and the world.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Thanks, Anstruth. Thank you for giving us that information. Yeah, 1 second. Iris has a question, right?
Well, I think I could refer to what Anstruth.
Okay. Pat, go ahead.
One last wrap up. I think our country is becoming acutely conscious in this period of COVID about the disparate health problems experienced by low-income communities of color. This is that place. And the combination of having the park taken away half a block from where this massive construction is going to unfold and construction of new affordable housing, all within half a block, think of the quality of life for the people in this neighborhood. And think about what it says about us as a city, that we are not treasuring and caring for the children and everybody else that lives in this neighborhood with more attention and care than I think the process here manifests. So, you know, we need to step up. We need to pay attention. We need to wake up to the impact on people of color, low-income people, of decisions like this. The city needs money, no doubt about it, and people need housing. People need neurocenter care, but we have to think about the human health impact on communities. We have to think neighborhood, and that's not what we see in looking at this. The white neighborhood is under really intense development pressure. And we're getting no support on this from
okay, we're trying to support you.
Neither one.
We are trying to support you. So Iris wants to know how this is aligned with the new Sustainable New Haven framework and our vision for the city. I think she's asking that of Aisha and Stacy. Oh, and another question she's asking is, what is the healthy proportion of parking lots to green spaces? Also, and she's still typing. But anyway, maybe you can start answering her.
I know. Patricia, you're right. It's it's the last item on the meeting. So it's been, yeah.
Well, I would like to just defer to, I think we maybe lost him. I was going to defer to Doug, who's been a promoter of alternate transportation and clean transportation. We're very, very sympathetic to a lot of the issues brought up here just now, and I think a part of a companion piece. I'll just. Oh, here, Doug is back on again. Doug, jump in anytime if you want. I just wanted to say a companion piece to our health impact studies is actually looking at traffic impact studies. And also, that is a key part of a health impact study. So going forward, it would be, requiring some additional documentation and potential mitigation from development applicants with regards to their traffic impacts, because obviously that has a huge health and climate impact. So, I think we're on the same page. It's just figuring out how we can adjust the regulatory process so that we can, actually compel some of these changes.
Thanks, Aisha. Thank you, Pat. Could not agree more about being sympathetic and looking in our tool belt and having very minimal tools to use in order to, leverage a project of such importance in the neighborhood. You'll see a bunch of work happening, but to answer his point, we're bringing things up to a bare minimum of standards of having a pedestrian light and having handicap ramps that are accessible and not out of date. It behooves me to ask if the Environmental Advisory Commission would create council. Thank you. I screwed it up again. I always do. If the EAC would be interested in creating a subcommittee for transportation, if there is one for parks, humbly, the
we
number
have
one
green a health. Transportation committee. We have one, but we only have 7 people of the whole of New Haven to deal with all this stuff. So we count on people like you to help us. and Chris and other people.
I'm not aware of your subcommittee. So
it's a committee. It's not a subcommittee. It's a committee, and you'll see it's on the agenda. Actually, maybe I'm wrong, but we have had people deal with transportation issues. Kristen,
you can blame me for that. I have
yelled at.
I was reporting on transportation for a while.
It's nobody's fault, but we do not ignore issues on purpose. We're here to try and help everybody, and we're not trying to be adversarial, but there just aren't that many of us. So
I've got 50 volunteers ready to serve on your subcommittee. Ask. There are more people who are interested in this. If you keep making it a 7-person committee, we'll never get anywhere.
No, this is a council, and by ordinance, that's as many people as are on it. We have some openings for alternates, but nobody has expressed any interest, as far as I know, because I chair the council, and I haven't heard from anybody who wanted to be on it. So, you know, we have discussed transportation issues with you before. We have various times invited you to come and discuss transportation issues that concern us, and sometimes you come and sometimes you haven't. And in this case, we are discussing a specific issue about a huge garage that's going to be built in a small neighborhood, and we're hoping that the city administration can help us stop this from happening. I think in the few months of this pandemic, we've found that many doctors like to work at home more than they were before, and I'm also concerned about things like electric cars in the future that nobody will hear coming and will run into children, and there are just so many issues. And yes, if you have a volunteer who wants to work on the Environmental Advisory Council Transportation Committee, we'll be delighted to have that person work on this particular issue for us. Why don't you discuss it with Pat and Olivia and see if you can, and Josh, and see if you can find a way to have someone help them with it. Yes, Olivia. You're muted. Olivia, go ahead.
We're going to plan a press conference or an action. So we'll keep you guys, you know, posted with that. All right.
Great.
Yeah, this is bad urban planning at its best. Okay, thank you so much for helping us here. And, you know, even if we could get another statement or another letter saying that this is a bad idea, that would be great too. Any way you could help would be well worth it. And if you need help with anything, just ask, okay? Thank you.
Well, maybe Doug can find somebody who can do this with you to write a letter, because we need somebody who knows something about it. We don't want someone who doesn't know anything about the issue to write a letter. So,
right.
Doug, okay. Do you have a person in mind?
You know, maybe Josh can help us.
Okay.
Randall.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. We can work on a draft of something and have it shared with you.
I think we have a full report, and in fairness to Doug, Doug has actually been interacting with us for months and months, and has, and aside from us, he took lots of leadership to try to at least get these intersects fixed. I can't figure out if having the signals is going to actually the balance point between enhancing and creating problems between having cars that can move more readily through intersections so they don't idle, but what will that mean for the pedestrian? I don't know. But Doug has been certainly working very, very hard and regularly with us, so I want to give him some recognition for that. These issues are complicated. We have a report that we all worked on that the hospital has. We're waiting for their response, which we will get on the 11th. You're invited to that meeting, Laura, and I hope it happens to be at a time when you're able to join us.
I hope so, too.
Yeah, and Laura, I think it'd be a conflict of interest for Doug to help write a letter, for one thing.
No, but one of his volunteers could. He said he had 60 people lined up to volunteer.
His office wrote a report approving the hospital's traffic plan. So I think that let's leave that one alone.
Okay.
Right.
Good idea. Okay. well, let's get a letter written by somebody who knows some of the details. And if the Environmental Advisory Council feels that it's something we know enough about to be able to sign the letter, of course we will do that happily.
That's what I think what would be helpful. Let me just say what would be helpful. I think what the stage we're at right now is basically appealing to the hospital on moral grounds and on the basis of their mission. So I think if you can do the simplest of letters and say that whatever the laws allow them to do, doing this in the middle of a low-income residential neighborhood with high asthma rates is really not in keeping with their mission, and we hope that they will voluntarily relook at this and consider what we have raised as issues.
Okay. Submit a draft to us, okay? I have many other things to write, and I don't want to start writing about something I don't know about.
You're frozen.
Kathy, cynical. But why would a hospital care about residential health?
Oh, my God. I think...
yeah.
Of course they care. You would think they would. It's not just about money.
I don't know. They've sprayed pesticides on their lawns before, so who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe they want more patients.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I really don't want to go there. I think, major systems like this are under their own imperatives, and they're trying to fix and figure in all of that. And as somebody with very neurologically challenged family members, I'm all for the neuro center, and I prefer not to question the motives of these folks, but it's all ending up in a bad place. It's a systems problem, and we need to fix that. But in the meantime, we need to ask the human beings that are running this particular system to step up and make a moral choice to relook at what their plan is while they still can do it.
You're right.
COVID has suction process from beginning, so it's an opportunity. We need to ask them on moral grounds to look at what they're about to do to this neighborhood, and you can help us by putting a letter together to that effect.
Okay, submit us a draft, and we'll be happy to look at it, as I've said three times. Thank you.
Okay. I couldn't hear you. You were frozen.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
Okay. Thank you very much for bringing your neighborhood issues to us. I'm so sorry you're having so many issues at the same time. And I encourage you to find one of your neighbors who wants to serve on the Environmental Advisory Council and deal with all these issues. Now you see some of our many issues that we deal with. And indeed, Doug is correct. We should get back to talking about transportation. I'm sorry I left it off the agenda. It was my mistake. My brain is not functioning on all cylinders in this lockdown. I hate these stupid Zoom meetings. But anyway, I think we get a lot accomplished. We'll write a letter. We will get, I think Kevin McCarthy could report back to us on transportation, because I think he's pretty, he's pretty avidly for good transportation. So if someone can deal with that, Kevin's not here tonight, but I'm volunteering him. That's what happens when you don't come to a meeting, you get volunteered. And if anybody else is interested in working with our council, we do have an alternate opening, I believe. So anyway, thank you all. And there will be a letter about the hospital, a letter about the park, and we already have the letter written about Wheeler Street. Is there anything else we need to do now in the very near future that anyone can think of? Okay, great. Well, then that's it. Thank you all for attending this meeting. Thank you for contributing everything. Thank you very, very much, everybody who works for the city, for helping us so much. We do appreciate everything you do, Aisha and Stacy and Doug, and especially Dawn and Giovanni. Thank you. And by the way, if you're still here, Giovanni, I went to the Fort Hale Fishing Pier recently and noticed that it needs a little TLC. There are some broken metal cables, and it's such a beautiful place. I want it kept in good repair. So thank you.
Yeah, we're I think they're on order. So
good.
We're getting some spare parts there.
Thank you. Okay. All right. We'll see as many people as can join us next month, October, on the first Wednesday of the month at 5:15, and hopefully we will get a lot of work done between now and then. Thank you all very, 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 very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.